5 a.m. just not as good.
Hi, this is Bill Boulder from IndieTickets.com, and you're listening to First Crack with Garrett Von Deer.
Thanks, Bill. This is Garrett Van Buren with the Saturday, November 20th installment of First Crack. And in today's episode, I'm bringing you a iChat conversation with Christopher Mark Bruder and myself on high-end audio equipment, high-end video equipment, and crazy exotic Italian cars in Minnesota as part of his WheelsOfItaly.com project. So give it a listen. Let me know what you think. Thoughts, comments, feedback can be sent to firstcrack@garrickvanburen.com. Thanks for listening. Chris, tell me about Wheels of Italy.
Oh, Wheels of Italy. It's a all-Italian car and bike organization that was set up to provide a venue for people that love Italian cars and bikes to get together and talk about them and show them off.
And that's in Wayzata right now?
Well, our office is in Wayzata.
Mm-hmm.
Our car show, which we've had two car shows now, 2004, 2003. They were held at Lake Calhoun Executive Center, right on Lake Calhoun in Minneapolis.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, this last year we had about 300 vehicles that showed up. Close to 75 were Ferraris. We had about 20 Lamborghinis, a scad of Alfa Romeos and Fiats. We probably had about 60, 70 motorcycles. The likes of Ducati, Moto Guzzi, Aprilia, Agusta, all the big race names and Italian bikes. We had Vespas there.
How big is the draw? Like, where are people coming from to show off their stuff?
Well, the majority is in the Twin Cities. You'd actually be surprised how many people live in the Twin Cities that own Italian exotics. There's a lot here. It's quite freaky. You don't see them that often driving around in the summertime, but they're there. So I'd say 99% of the people that were at the show were from here. We did have some people from, where did he come from? Well, yeah, he was relatively close. He was from Iowa.
Okay.
There was somebody else that came from, like, Missouri or something that came up for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people registered all over the world on our website, actually. We have people from France and Germany and Italy, of course.
What's the URL?
Wheelsofitaly.com.
Oh, okay.
You can also go to WOIOW.com or WOIWeb.com. That all forwards to it.
Oh, okay. How long have you guys been around?
We've been around for a little over 2 years, two and a half years probably. And that's from the inception, which is just talking about it and wanting to do something about it.
Oh,
the impetus that started all this was one of the co-founders. I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Schaefer is another one, and Phil Slavic is the other one. Dan and Phil and I both all own Alfa Romeos. Dan used to belong to an Alfa Romeo club and was getting tired of this club being run into the ground. It's like the people that organized it didn't care anymore. And they had this really cool thing that they just let die, pretty much. And he was also tired of all of the clubs being independent. Like, you'd have an Alfa Romeo club, or you'd have a Fiat club, or a Ferrari club.
And there wouldn't be any connection between them.
Right, exactly. So he decided that he wanted to start something that would allow all these people to get together under one roof, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And just have it be about Italian cars and bikes.
Right.
A place where people could get together and just show off their stuff and not be alienated by a car show where people will not ever win, like, best car or whatever. So we got rid of the whole, we did away with the whole giving awards at a car show kind of thing. The only thing that we wanted to do was to bring these people together with their vehicles and show them off.
Cool.
And the first year we did it, we had probably about 150 vehicles. This year we had about 300.
Nice.
The first year we had probably about 4,000 to 5,000 people come through the show. This year we had about 10,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys charge for admission or something like that too?
No, free, absolutely free.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah, we're not trying to get rich off of this. We're doing it because we have a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the e-commerce thing, that's how we really will make money is through e-commerce. But we're really not trying to make money through the show. I mean, we have sponsors and vendors that are at the show. Like this year, we had Sebastian Joe's Ice Cream was there.
Nice.
I'm trying to think of the restaurant. They're going to hate me for not knowing it off the top of my head here. last year's restaurant was Vecchio's.
Okay.
So we charge those people to be able to set up a tent at our show.
Right.
And that just recoups the cost of being able to rent the space,
mm-hmm.
Our insurance on it, because when you have that many cars, we had about $30 to $40 million of the vehicles there.
Okay, and you guys, as the organizing entity, had to pull out insurance for all those vehicles?
Not individual insurance for each car. We had to have enough coverage there in case an accident happened. We couldn't get sued then.
Right.
The most expensive car that was there was a 1957 Ferrari Tour de France, which is valued at $3.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
If something were to happen to that car,
yeah,
and it wasn't insured, well, they'd come after us.
Uh-huh.
So we have to cover our butts just to make sure that if anything does go wrong, we're not personally liable for it.
Right, right.
And of course, nothing did go wrong. Everybody walked away happy. It was a great show. So.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Oh.
So next year.
Next year.
Definitely stop out.
I'm sorry?
I said next year you should definitely come to our show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'll bring my father-in-law, too. He loves car shows.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, he would love this.
Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds great.
Yeah.
You are probably one of the few people I know that has a winter car.
Oh, right.
Still the case?
Well, I used it. Huh?
Do you still have a summer and a winter, or a regular and a non-daily driver?
Well, we consolidated. I had three cars going into this relationship with Suzanne.
Three cars?
Fiance. Yeah, I had a winter car and two summer cars.
Okay, what were they?
I have the two summer cars still, but I got rid of the winter car, and Suzanne got rid of her main car, which was a Saab.
Ah.
I have a 2002 Chrysler PT Cruiser Dream Cruiser.
Right, that one's pretty sexy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you saw that.
Yeah.
And I have an Alfa Romeo Milano Verde.
Wow.
Which is only to be driven in the summer because Italian cars from that era, if you walked by with a little container of table salt, it would fall apart just looking at it.
A good friend of mine in Chicago had an Alfa Romeo, and that I think it was their only car.
Mm-hmm.
I know, right?
Oops.
And the whole time, every 3-4 months, something just awful would happen to the car. And she'd be like, damn it. It's got to go back into the shop. It's going to cost me $2,000. It's,
yep.
Why are you using that all the time? Yeah.
Yeah, it's for fun, It's not...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if they're still importing them into this country and you're buying them new, that's fine. But
yeah.
As it is now, you probably shouldn't be doing that if you're only darn.
Yeah. So what's number three?
We don't have those cars anymore, but then the third car was my winter car, which was my 1990 Honda Accord.
Okay.
That I had that stereo plan.
Right, right. Huh.
But that was a piece of crap, and I sold it to a relative.
You sold it to who?
A relative. Well, a future relative.
Okay, right.
I didn't sell it. I gave it to her as a gift, because there was probably about $500, $600 worth of stuff that needed to get done.
Oh.
I wanted to be able to sleep at night,
Right. I could charge you for it, but yeah.
But, no.
Alright, so on the opposite end of the audio quality spectrum, tell me about your home audio setup.
Well, it's what I would call a audiophile sound system.
Okay.
It consists of my amplifier is a tube amplifier, and they're
right.
Who are not familiar with a tube amplifier? Well, okay, it's like the olden days where they used tubes to light up stuff and get them to work.
There was a place in Chicago just down the street from me that sold those things, and I would always walk in there and feel fairly insignificant.
Well, because they probably had some ones that were like really big in size.
Yeah, and I'd be like, I don't know what these things are, and I'm pretty sure I can't afford them.
Yeah. Most of them, most people can't. And they're still made today. I mean, my amplifier is only about 10 years old. It's not like it's an old one.
Right.
Tube amplifiers are still made, quite a bit of them, most of them in this country.
Mm-hmm.
The best audio equipment is American-made, Canadian, like French-Canadian-made, and French-made.
Huh.
And then after that would be like English-made and then German-made. But Japanese-made, the highest-end audio equipment is not Japanese. There's only like one or two companies in Japan that are really good. Like one is called AccuPhase.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the name of the other one off the top of my head, but most Japanese is all mass market stuff.
Right.
What people consider to be the best that don't know what high-end audio truly is. high-end audio is really mastered by the Americans. It's quite stunning. It's one of the few industries I think that we pioneer better than anybody else. It's like the computer industry.
So this, as we're talking, I'm wondering, we had just talked about, you know, how in cars you gotta worry about motor noise and road noise and all that stuff. I would suspect that in a house you'd have to also minimize other noise, not just like refrigerators, but, you know, there would be acoustics specific to different rooms and such. How do you account for that?
Well, I don't right now because I'm with someone who would think I'm insane. And that's one of the biggest problems with audiophiles that are with people is being able to convince them to allow you to do certain things.
What certain things would you do that would be considered insane?
Well, like, there are these cushions that you buy for the corners of the walls, you know, by the ceiling.
Okay.
Where the walls join up, there's like these triangular-shaped pillow-type things that you put up there to help absorb the sound as opposed to
reflect it?
Reflecting it all over the place.
Okay.
And then there's also panels that you buy that are any size that you can imagine, from like small, from like 1 foot wide by 4 feet tall to 4 feet wide to 10 feet tall. And you can put them like behind the rack, like behind where your components sit and your speakers.
Okay.
You put a pine there, so no refracted sound gets back to the listener at odd intervals.
Huh.
Because what's happening is when the sound is coming to your ear.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only the sound coming from the speakers that's hitting your ear, but it's also the sound that's refracting from the room that's hitting your ear at a different time.
Okay, like a little echo.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's the refracted sound. And what you're trying to do is minimize that.
Right.
If you have a room that refracts too much sound, it's called a live room.
Right.
And if you have a sound that's too dead, it's a dead room, and then you're still going to get bad sound.
Yeah.
When you go to a concert, you're not in a vacuum. You're not in an anechoic chamber. You're experiencing a live event in the live surrounding.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're at home, you're trying to reproduce the live event. So you don't want a dead room. But you don't want a completely live room either, because in like a theater setting, there's a lot of acoustic panels on the sides of the room,
mm-hmm.
the back of the room, the chairs, the people themselves. It all helps to absorb some of the reflected sound.
Right.
So you're trying to recreate that in the home, and it's a very costly endeavor. Once you start down that path, there's no turning back.
So, we were at Jen and I were out at a show last night, in this bar in South Minneapolis that, I can't recommend,
okay.
And I think they just started doing shows there, whatever, it was a friend of a friend was gonna play, and they had, taken out ceiling panels at random places. And I'm like, and at the same time, there's like, you know, duct tape on the wall and bare wires hanging out of electrical sockets. And I'm like, well, is it just that this is a crap hole, or are they trying to get better acoustics?
Well, I think the wires hanging out of the sockets is definitely for acoustic purposes. I've read some really intriguing things that suggest that if you have a wire hanging out of sockets, it really improves the sound.
Excellent. I appreciate your expert opinion on this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
Thank you, Chris. You have been listening to a conversation between myself, Gary Van Buren, and Christopher Mark Ritter on all sorts of crazy stuff through iChat. I hope you enjoyed the show. Good, bad, and indifferent, send it over to firstcrack@garrickvanburen.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.